listeners, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. This is show number 62, and this is December 15th, 2003. And we're recording right here at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman, Don Shaw.
Mr. Time, how's everything today, man?
Everything is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Don Patterson?
Yes, sir.
Hi there.
Glad to be there. Hello, Tom.
What's up?
What's up? you got a problem with that?
Oh, boy. My name's Tom Houston, but here's the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Phil Parr.
Like, hello, like I'm, like, glad to be here, like whatever, like my granddaughter says like. Every third word she says is like Papa.
Or if they're going to tell you that somebody told them something, it's blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. You know, well, he went blah, blah, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, fourscore and, like, 7 years ago, like, hello there. Welcome to the, this is the, I'm glad we're taking off for Christmas. I'm
show number
the Christmas 62. Break.
62.
Yes, the old Christmas break. Yes, we're taking off the Blind Handyman. We're also taking off on Blind Like Me. So there'll be old interviews of shows of people that you've loved from the past, those heroes of yours from the days of yesteryear.
After the study.
Hi-o
Silver.
Ranger. Yeah, but it's amazing. We've done 21 of those.
Yes, we have.
And 62 of these things.
Yep.
Good.
And by the time you hear this, you'll be hearing the actual 22nd of Blind Like Me.
The 22nd show of Blind Like Me. Yeah, because we're going to do a cooking, Dale cooking.
Which
cooking in the dark.
Right, after this.
And we have spared no expense to bring these to you.
That's right.
To bring you these exciting shows. Randy should have hung around. We could have played a little tune on the old show. He would've.
What a deal that would have been,
we need to get
man.
Him to be our guest.
We need find something to do for the last part of the show anyway, you know, so what the hell.
He does a little bit of guitar repair. And
Randy does. Yes, he does.
Sort. And so he would make an excellent live and in-person kind of guy.
He does guitar repair. My phones will not go out today. I have a different radio.
Uh-huh.
I have a new, exciting radio. I'm pushing all the buttons on it. I think I've got it locked where there's just no way I can turn it off or do anything. That was
excellent.
That was upsetting last week. I had no headphones. I didn't realize.
Well, now you know what I went through. My goodness.
No, that was your fault. This wasn't my fault.
It wasn't my fault.
Well, it was because you did it. This is your fault. But anyway, here we are for another exciting. We have email today, don't we?
Well, yeah, we do have an email today. We really do.
We do, in fact.
All right.
Boy, and I can't wait either because we have email.
And email meaning like just.
No,
plain,
this is actually.
No, old-fashioned email.
And email.
This is not off the list. No, we had several this week. These aren't off the list. This is regular email.
Well,
you're not on the list. So how would you?
Last week we talked about mold around air conditioners and stuff like that.
It was a week or two ago, yeah.
Okay, but we showed right then we didn't know a thing about it.
Here's a lady that's right on top of that thing. She says, hi, this is there is a spray used to eliminate moldy automobile air conditioners. I do not know the name, but just inquire at automobile repair shops or supply stores. I get a bang out of your show. Keep up the good work. And this comes from Luella Harpster. Thank you, Luella.
Yeah.
Well, God,
great
yes,
tip.
Luella.
Yep.
But I bet it has some bleach in it.
I bet it does, too.
I mean, bleach will just do, bleach will kill everything. It doesn't make any difference what it is. Bleach will, that's the only, was this discussed on the list, Char, or not?
Yeah, they discussed it on the list some, and we had talked about it here and said, you know, the same thing with the bleach, but that's interesting how it would apply to an auto air conditioner. I'm just wondering how you, if it has a like a nozzle, like a WD-40 can or something, or how you would get the, how you'd get it into the, to your system in your auto.
Well, I do know from listening to Car Talk that there is a drain place there where water comes out of your car air conditioner, just like there is in your at your house. You know, there's a
like a hose.
There's a tube that goes down, and if it gets stopped up, the water will pour back in your floorboard.
Ah,
so I've heard that question asked on Car Talk. This guy, you know, every time he turns a corner, he has water in the floorboard, and it's because his little pan down there underneath his air conditioner is not draining. So
some way you'd have to locate that and put this stuff into the pan or the drain hose.
I'd just like to know what's in it.
Some way,
what its active ingredients is, because I bet it's chlorine.
I bet it is, too.
It's the only chemical I knew anything about, so that must be what it is.
But you never know.
Well, the air conditioner guy told Pat to put, chlorine in. You put some bleach in your pan.
Every other month.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He said, I built you a little walkway over here so you can get to your units with no trouble, and every other month come up here and put a capsule in it. Put some bleach
put
or
some
a little
bleach or something
a
in
thing
it.
Like you put in a swimming pool, you know.
Yeah. And so, obviously, that's a good... But I don't know if that's where the mold is. This guy said last week said he had cleaned his tray.
Yeah,
I guess he meant the... What does this button do?
Well, you know, and then the bottom line the odors, you know, that would come from that are going to be coming through your ductwork. Now, that you know, people like Dennis Dutton, who does restoration, and they clean air conditioning ducts. Now,
That's a whole different ball game.
And I'm not sure if they use. In fact, I see him from time to time, and so I think I might just ask him, you know. Or we could ask him a couple of these.
Yeah, that would be an interesting show.
Now, they use it like a rotary brush, but then on certain kind of ducts, you have to be careful. I mean, they can't use their brush on these, the tinfoil ones with the springs and the insulation.
Yeah.
You know, old metal duct work. They can.
Well, they don't do much of that metal stuff anymore. It's all done from...
No, and so, but they clean them. You know, they have a way to clean your duct, so we need to, I'll try to find out.
Over at our house, we have the old metal duct work still, though, Phil.
You do. That house was built in 1974.
And one thing I like about that house, too, is on its air conditioner system, you know how a lot of folks, at least people in the city, how their air conditioners drain into the sewer system?
Yeah.
Well, this air conditioner over there drains out. It has a PVC pipe, a run of PVC pipe that just runs outside.
Yes, it does.
Which to me is a fine way to do it. You don't have to worry about anything. You never had any problem with any pipes clogging up or anything.
Well, that's the way mine is. Mine just drains. But that air conditioner at your house is nice because you can get right to that drain and blow it out.
Sure,
I used to do it every year, blow that drain out, whereas mine comes down through the return air and then goes down into the slab and goes outside. And it's hard to get up into that return air. It's real small.
It would be harder to get to it.
Neat thing they did on our house, too, is right over the garage door, I mean the outside of the garage where you would drive in, they put the emergency drain.
That's a good idea.
Side. I mean, it's going to be the first thing you see.
So you have to notice
when, when you're pulling into the garage.
So if it's draining, you know you've got a problem.
You've got a problem to get there and take care of it,
Ours is on the front porch, but the problem is we very seldom use that porch. I mean, that punched porch doesn't get...
That's right.
Used near as much as the back porch would be.
Well, we all used Action, you know, air conditioning guy for one reason or another, and when he did, they kind of really did me a disservice. When they put in my new heating unit, all the inside parts, they ran the emergency drain off to the side of the house along with the regular drain. And so you don't know unless you know which one. Man, you need that emergency drain where, you know, you can see it if you're partially sighted or feel it if you're blind.
That's a fact.
Yeah,
you sure
honestly
do.
Just check that sucker out.
Because I remember you saying that it was you thought the emergency drain was running, but it wasn't. It was your regular drain.
Yeah, his inspectors came and identified. They said that I had a problem. They identified the regular drain as the emergency drain, and they identified an old, no longer used drain as the primary drain. See, and so nothing was coming out there, and so they weren't aware that I'd had the.
And so the guy said, your pan is stopped.
Yeah, and I go up there, and it's bone dry. You know,
absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's not worrisome. But I'm going with the ductwork. I didn't think about that. But I bet if he had it. But now, that's an expensive thing to have done.
Yes, it is. And they have to be, you know, depending on, like where Shaw has the old type, I'm not even sure how they do the newer type unless it is with chemicals. And that might be just a perfect question to ask.
Yeah,
ask our friend Dennis. You know,
well,
I have to call him anyway.
Because I got to have carpets cleaned, and so I need to call him anyway. So I'll ask again. The guy was hitting me up to have it done last time I had carpets cleaned to have the ductwork.
Yeah,
was that the chimney sweep? I can't remember.
Well, actually, when Emily had her little potato chip bag fire.
Yeah.
All right, they did that as a part of the restoration. And they took the vents off, and they were up in those vents but they weren't. I mean, they. I don't know. I don't remember. You know, I didn't pay attention to what exactly they were doing.
So. Yeah. Well, we need to find out about that, but this guy with the mold in, I can't remember who it was that emailed us and had that. That's got to be where the odor is, would be in those air conditioners.
Right.
What else you got, Tommy?
Okay, this from the list.
All right.
Says, well, hello, group. My name is Isaiah, and I've been a member of the group now for just about a week. I enjoy reading the various email messages that are being exchanged, and I find many of them to be quite informative. Thank you. I have a few questions of my own that I'd like to put out here. And see what some of you may have to say about what I'm asking about. I'm
right.
currently studying to be a paralegal, and for quite a while I've been considering doing some locksmith work as a secondary trade. However, I was wondering if any of you may know any other totally blind locksmiths, and if so, what types of challenges may a locksmith encounter? Is this something that a totally blind person can independently do? Also, if any of you may know where I can go to acquire the knowledge needed to learn the trade, I would appreciate you sharing that information with me. Lastly, approximately, how long does it take to actually learn all that is required to be a locksmith? Is there any material on tape or in any other format that I can purchase to start reading about?
Man.
Where, what's required to do this type of work? Well, that's about it for now, but I appreciate you taking the time to read the message, and I'll be looking
a blind locksmith, huh?
To hearing from the group soon.
Well, let's and take them one at a
thank
time.
Thank you, Isaiah.
Thank you, what Isaiah.
I've never heard of a blind locksmith.
Well, can we take this one at a time? Also, I've never heard of a blind paralegal. See, we've gone down this road.
Well, now, that's what what's your name is
that's
studying
right.
to do. There are plenty of blind lawyers, so why couldn't you be a paralegal?
Well, it's very difficult. So I think you ought to become a blind lawyer. Actually, if I were going to start looking for a manual, which is what you're talking about, to teach you a trade or something, I would check with Recordings for the Blind. They would be your best source if there's any material on the subject of locksmithing. Recordings for the Blind may have it. If they do not have it, if you can find the print. And I'm sure there are textbooks or books on how to do it. Recordings for the Blind will record them for you.
Yeah.
So that would be my first place to start. Other than that, I don't know of any just a book title out there.
I've never, what do locksmiths do? I mean, they put in locks, right?
Well, they put in locks, and they also can make you a key. They can make you a key. Or make you a key from an existing lock or make you a lock.
That's the biggest problem I can see with that, though, is one of the other things that a locksmith does is open locks. So, in other words, if someone's out on the deer lease and just happens to be drank too many beers and dropped their keys in the lake, they'd call the locksmith to come and open their truck. And then how would you get to some of these locations that...
Yeah, that would be a deal because
locksmithery
would be done on location. So you'd have to get there. I mean, you'd have to have some way to do transportation. So you'd have to.
Yeah, I think making, you know, like you walk into Abney and Son and say, I want you to make a key. I think that's fairly simple.
Oh,
like
sure.
You use a certain
blank. That's
and then
doable.
For certain kinds of keys, and the machine's probably fairly automatic. I mean, I think you have to have some vision, or that could be overcome. How you would take a re-key a lock, like, in other words, if I have my key, I have a key that I want you to set my front door to. I've got a lock and my key. I want to keep the key, and you change
that's right.
the lock.
Change the lock,
I don't
which we've
know
had
exactly
done before.
How a blind fellow could do
or
it.
Or if you go to the hardware store and you want to buy... six, let's see, how many, baby? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 deadbolts. And they're all going to come with different keys. The locksmith, I mean, the guy at the hardware store can take those deadbolts and make them all work with one key.
With one key, right.
So that you won't have seven different sets of keys. Because when we did this building, we had him key all the deadbolts the same as the deadbolts in the house. So... one key will open the doorknob lock and one key will open the deadbolt lock to any door here, and there are Well, seven out here with locks on them, and one, two, three, four in the house.
Uh-huh.
So this key, and they can keep. How would you do that? How would you set those tumblers? How would you know how to do that?
That would be the big...
Yeah, I think just using the little machinery that you
could do.
I think you might could do, like, say, making a key. That might be, you know, I'm not sure that you can. I don't know that I could, but I'm saying that might be the simplest to convert over. But actually going inside a lock and
figuring out how
don't know how that would work.
But if there is a blind locksmith out there somewhere, send your email to blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
Let me say just a word before we go to break on paralegal. Paralegals end up, and I know this because my wife is an attorney, paralegals end up doing a lot of research. And unless you want to spend a lot of time researching cases for lawyers, you might be better off to decide you wanted to be legal secretary, because legal secretaries now, a lot of it is fill in the blank. I mean, they have things like, I don't know what she, I don't want to mention the thing that she has, but basically a divorce decree is put in the names.
Uh-huh.
So you might look at that. I don't know if being a paralegal, because they end up doing a lot of research. I think that through that long and horrible. Now that we've shot this guy down, you might want to learn to tune pianos or something.
Well, I was just going to
say... Only kidding. It's a joke.
I was just going to say Westlaw. I'm sure he's using that. It's a fairly complicated program. And then the one that has the built-in templates for a lot of the legal forms. I can't recall the name. But so, you know, I think there might be a better way to go, but...
But anyway, think about that. Let us know how you do, and we don't mean to throw water on you. If you want to be a paralegal and a locksmith, man, knock yourself out. We want you to be a guest on our show.
That's
if you're blind and you want to do it, you got my blessing and everybody else's also.
That's it, dude.
We'll be back in just a minute with our guests and more, the Blind Handyman Show, guys. It is the season, and that means gift buying time, and we have a great idea for some gifts for people for Christmas, and to tell us about, here's Dale Campbell. Dale?
Hey, Phil and listeners. The gift we're going to talk about, and you all may have heard it, we promoted this originally on Cooking in the Dark. It's called the Voila. It's a talking barcode reader. No cords, no wires, no computers, 100% portable. Heck, it'll fit in your pants pocket or even in your purse to take to the store if you need to label any items. The Voila is about 6 inches long. It weighs less than 3.5 ounces, and it's a portable barcode reader. The unit comes with its own barcodes, which as you scan the barcode, it will remember what has been scanned and allow you to record what you have, the item into the memory for what you've scanned. I've got a can in my hand, and I don't know what it is, y'all, but I'm going to run the Voila across it.
All right.
Can of chicken broth.
Can of chicken broth.
A can of chicken broth.
Well, how about that?
Now, you can shake, rattle, and roll it, and you never would have known this, but the Voila is just that easy. In less than 5 minutes, you can be ready and using it. Labeling anything in your kitchen from spices to cans of food. Heck, in your garage, you can label cans of paint, glues, adhesives. It's perfect for everybody. You could even label your electrical box out in the garage or in, you know, wherever it is to label what outlets are what.
How do we get one?
You can call me at 713-876-6971 or email at cookinginthedark@houston.rr.com. And we can give you all the information regarding the Voila. It's a super, super little tool. The price on it, folks, it's not $250 like you may have seen some places. It's not $229. It's not $200. It's not even $180. It's a special price right now of $150. That's right. Call and get in touch with me today so we can get one of these in your stocking for Christmas.
Give us the phone number one more time.
Phone number is 713-876-6971. Or email at cookinginthedark@houston.rr.com. You've got to have one of these. It'll make your life so much simpler.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
Okay, we're back with a guest today that we visited with here, 10 or 12 shows ago, I guess, Ron Yearns. How are you doing today, Ron?
Doing fine.
Man, it's good to have you back on the show again.
Now, you're the guy who does some furniture upholstery, right?
That's what I'm doing now, yes.
And we talked a good bit about that last time. I've forgotten what town. Where do you live?
It's in Warrensburg, Missouri.
Warrensburg, Missouri. Small town.
Kansas City.
Do what now?
Southeast of Kansas City.
How far from Kansas City?
About 55 miles.
So you're on your own there in this little town. And you, I think Don had said that you built an upstairs addition to a house. Is that right?
That's correct. I did that a number of years ago. I guess about 1990 I started that. And since I didn't want anything to leak and I was still working at the time, I just built it on top of the roof and came back after I had it all closed in and tore the roof out from under it. That was inside.
What a deal.
What nerve is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's no lie.
That's pretty nervy thing to do.
I don't recommend doing it that way.
But winter was coming on, or you just didn't want it to rain in there, so you built a roof over the roof. Now, was this a flat roof or a pitched roof or what?
Oh, it was one end was a hip roof. The other end was just a straight gable.
Man.
And you took when you built this other deal, you had to end up taking the rafters.
Now I set one of the outside walls on the peak of the existing roof.
Okay.
So I just tore out half of the old roof.
Yeah. So
the inside half.
You had support there, but those rafters, I mean, they do something. They're not there for looks, guys. They're, they're there for something.
Well, you take the shingles off, you take the roof boards, and then you go in underneath and you build a wall under that.
In other words, you laid cross beams, maybe 2x6s, edgeways underneath there before you started taking these rafters out.
Right. Well, I built a short wall with about 4-foot studs.
And then you had one wall on the ground, right? That other wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was kind of an L-shaped house, and I closed in that L.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, that's quite. I've never considered building a second story. So what was under this thing? I mean, what sort of room was underneath this addition that you built?
Well, it was the original house plus the addition I built in 73. And so when I built the upstairs, it was larger than the original house was.
Because it covered the addition that you built and part of the original
house.
But you had a mess there for a while. You'd have had a mess there for a while because it was.
If I had known, I probably would not have done it that way.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Ben.
No, is it fair to say you were blind at the time you did this?
Oh, I was legally blind, but not.
Okay,
not
just
really
just had enough vision to get yourself in trouble. Yeah. I do that all the time.
Because you had to come back and put, I guess these rooms had a ceiling in them that you were building over.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they already had some rafters.
Some ceiling joists,
ceiling joists running across. And so you thought stout enough to hold the weight of a second, because it's heavy up there. I mean, it's going to be.
Well, actually, I took the rafters and reused them, kind of paired them up with the existing ceiling joists, so they were like. What would that be? 3x6s. Then when I got done.
Yeah. So you had a pretty good thing. Pretty stout situation there. But you didn't step through the ceiling too often.
I never did.
Never did.
I only did that when I was working for other people.
Step through the ceiling. Yeah. This was sheetrock, right?
Yeah.
Whoa. Did you do that, Philip?
I never did it, but a friend of mine and I were carrying a heater through the attic, and all of a sudden he disappeared.
Oh, man.
Actually, he didn't disappear. His foot just never. Of course, there was this big hole. Sam Fitzgerald, who it was, Tom.
Oh,
Really? We were carrying this heater through the attic, and he just stepped in the, you know,
stepped
I didn't.
Through the ceiling?
Blind Phil did not step through the ceiling. The sighted guy carrying the other end of the heating unit stepped through the ceiling. I couldn't.
Whoa.
Of course, it's safe to say at that point in time, this was right after I moved to Lufkin, so I was probably 33 or 4. I'm sure if it was after 10 o'clock in the morning, we'd been drinking.
That would be fair to say.
At that point in time, I started about 10 in the morning. As soon as I got off my morning shift, I'd go to the fridge and have a cold. It was terrible. So I'm sure that he may have been a little drunk. But we did. But you only did it when you're working for other people, Ron, huh?
That's right. I used to do some house wiring, and I did it once, I think, and then, of course, the help you have, they tend to do it too. It adds cost up.
Everybody that's worked in an attic's done it. I mean, there's no question about it. If you fool around the attic long enough, you're gonna. I knew a guy's unrolling roof paper and just walked off the edge of the roof one time. unrolling felt, just stepped backwards off the roof into space. You know, and he could see. This guy could see, so it happened. So you built this. You raised up some walls, put a roof on it, and then tore the old roof off. Of course, you were always working on a slant all the time when you were building.
That's pretty all right, yes, sir.
Yeah, but at that time you were much younger.
Oh, yes.
And you can handle this.
Yep. I would start that today.
Yeah, the working
got more sense. I learned something.
Yeah, the working conditions would be pretty rugged.
They would be, but you just run out of land, and you needed to go up instead of.
Yeah, I had 4 kids, and I just felt like we needed more space.
And so you built them a couple bedrooms upstairs, and you put a bath up there. Do you run any water?
Oh yeah, put a bath, living room, kitchen area.
Upstairs.
Yeah.
Like a little apartment.
Wow.
Yep. I kind of designed it so it could be in the future rented out that way.
That's pretty nervy.
It is.
Do you still live in this house?
Oh, yes.
This is still your house?
Uh-huh.
But the kids are long gone.
No.
No?
That's what you get for building that apartment,
no kidding.
Ron.
Yeah. Good thinking there, huh?
I still got one in and one half out.
Man.
I'm not going to touch that. One in and one half out. So one that comes home every once in a while?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, well,
that's what happens when
you build. You know, when the money's low.
Yeah, that'll happen. I did that a lot when I was a whole lot younger. So, of course, you had to put insulation.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had to put a floor above that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that isn't as good a way to do it. I mean, what other way could you have done it? You could have torn the roof off to begin with.
Yeah, could have torn it all off and went from there, but... You know, when you're working 8 hours a day, you don't have a lot of time to work between the rainstorms.
Yeah, and once you got it off, it would have rained. There'd be no question about that.
That's right.
And if you knew ahead of time it was going to take a long time to do this project, it makes sense, but man.
Like April 15th to about October 15th.
Well, it sounds like, you know, long term, yeah, it's 6 months. It sounds like a good long project anyway.
The outside was done. It was shingled, painted, storm windows, the whole bit.
Before you tore the roof off?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's wild.
That is
wild.
Incredible.
Of course, you had to build a staircase.
Oh, yeah.
So you'd already done that, so you could walk up there.
Well, not until I finished the outside, I didn't.
Yeah. Is this entered from the inside of the house, or is it an outside staircase?
It's inside.
An inside.
Yeah.
And you told me originally that you were a carpenter? By trade, or?
Not as an electrician, by trade.
Electrician.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What a deal, man.
So you know how to do all kind of things, right?
Yeah, it just comes from necessity, lack of money.
Yeah. Lack of money.
Yeah.
Well, how's
the
upholstery business? You still...
Oh, it's a little slow right now, you know, snowy weather and stuff.
Oh, is it snowing already in Missouri?
Oh, yeah. We had second snow.
Whoa.
Third one maybe tonight. Not much forecast, but you know what forecasts are worth, too.
Well, yeah, I do. But luckily, you don't have the roof off of anything.
No kidding.
So that's pretty nervy. I guess you had nail gun and compressor and everything, so you...
Oh, of course not.
Oh, you hammered it all.
I had a compressor, but I didn't have a nail gun at the time.
So you did it the old-fashioned way, where
yes,
you hammered nails.
Me and a 14-year-old son at the time.
Is that right? And even after putting him through all that, he still won't leave home.
I was going to say,
that's long gone.
Oh, that's long gone.
He was the older one. Yeah. No, I just never had good sense to know that I couldn't do something.
Well, you can. Go ahead, Pat. What were you going to say?
No, I was wondering if this was the child that was remaining there trying to get back some of his hard-earned work.
No, that was not.
Yeah, if you hadn't built that apartment, Ron, you might have a better chance of getting rid of these children.
Well, let me ask you this. When you built your stairway, I mean, obviously you had to have a starting point for this project. So did you add anything downstairs other than the stair? I mean, did you...
I added a
little concrete
16 by 24 room downstairs.
Okay, and then that's where the staircase was
went in
to go up.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. You see, this is an L-shaped house.
Right. Okay.
So
now
I filled out the L when I built the upstairs.
Were you dealing with siding to get through to, or was it a brick home?
Oh, it's all wood.
Okay, because I'm faced with the same. I've built a second garage out at the house we're building with an anticipating adding on, and because we're bricking this garage, and then I'm wondering, is it easier to remodel and cut through brick or siding, you know? Well, brick is actually pretty flimsy. I mean, you can actually take out brick.
It's just veneer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just veneer. So you know, I was worried about that too, but actually it turns out I think it's easier to do. But I would be faced with the same thing, pouring more concrete and then adding the staircase to get up to where I would have a nice room upstairs. And so, so then obviously you dried, so you poured your concrete first, your 16 by something, then you built the downstairs walls or the whole, then you started framing, right?
Well, the downstairs walls, actually I built them, I used full length 16-foot. Well, 2x6s on one wall.
Right.
And just top and bottom plate to raise it. So it was like 16 foot tall, 24 foot long.
After you poured your slab, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, that was heavy.
Yeah.
I had to grab some help here and there for that.
I would imagine. Oh, yeah. So why did you want that wall 16 feet tall?
Well, I was just too lazy.
That was
one thing. I wanted to build the whole outside.
Yeah, okay. That was the outside.
So if I had went in there with two of them, I wouldn't have had anything to work on the upper part of that second wall with.
Okay, so this wall, the plate was at 8 feet? I mean, this was the tall wall that was on one side?
Bottom plate and top plate at 16 feet.
Man, standing that thing up would have just been
I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you stood it up. How long was this wall?
I had some ropes and come along here and there.
Man.
Going over the top of the house.
Yeah.
You'd almost had to. Man, what a wall. How long was this wall? 16 feet tall and...
24.
Whoa.
God.
That would have been one heavy,
yeah,
heavy
you
dude.
Were a rather stubborn fellow in your younger days. People say that you couldn't
and
do that.
My wife tells me that all the time.
Yeah, well, I think she's got a point. But you use come-alongs.
Yeah.
See, blind people don't know much about come-alongs, but they're the handiest thing in the world. They're a thing that got hooks at each end, or the set I have has a hook at each end, and you just keep flipping this lever, and every time you do it, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter until you release it. I mean, you could pull...
Something's got to move.
Something is, you could pull a car out of a bog hole with a come-along without any problem. I mean, they're stout. And two of them would move anything. So you just use ropes.
Actually, I think I just had one at the time. But
one come along.
Yeah.
Right.
But I had a couple guys and some wooden braces, you know, as we got it up so far. And
yeah.
So, yeah, it wasn't fun.
You just pulled it up until it looked plumb.
I used a plumb bob.
And then tied it to the play. I guess you didn't. But I bet you cut slits in it for the screw, for the thing, for the bolts that come up through the plate. You didn't try to fit any holes.
You know, I'm trying to remember. I know I had foundation bolts in the foundation.
Sure you did.
So I must have brought it up over and then dropped it down on it.
Dropped it down. Boy, your measurements would have to be pretty exact.
Cut slots or do something.
Yeah.
Man.
That's pretty nervy.
Yeah, that's wild.
For a sighted guy or a blind guy. Of course, this time you had a little better sight.
I had better sight, yeah.
Didn't you say 73?
Yeah, so that's been, no, this is like 90.
90, so your sight was...
I wasn't driving then, but I could still walk around and stuff pretty decent.
But your sight was a whole lot better then than it is now?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that'd be a nervy thing, a wall that big, even for a sighted person to try to. I can't imagine.
Those big 16-foot two-bys, man, would be.
Yeah, I wanted the full 2x6, so better insulation.
Sure.
I could have used the little smarts and used the 2x4s, I guess.
Well, yeah, but up there you need a lot of insulation because it gets cold in Missouri, doesn't it?
Oh, sometimes.
And gets hot in the summer, I understand.
Oh, yes.
That it gets awful hot.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I know a friend that was going by a radio station in Missouri, and he said it was just terribly hot up there.
Really? In the summer?
Yeah.
Amazing.
You wouldn't think that, would you? That far
you
north?
Wouldn't think that. No.
I'd say maximum, most I ever saw here was like 113. The lowest is like a negative 20.
Wow. That's a big range now.
Negative 20?
Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Minnesota stuff.
Not in the same week, at least.
I don't know. 113, that's they say it's hot in Texas. We don't get that hot.
Well, that's not normal. Those are both pretty abnormal temperatures.
And you did this building project in the summer.
Yeah.
So you were there between the two roofs with your new roof on and your old roof still on, up in there in the summertime. And it had to be hot, awfully hot.
You know,
well, most of the work was outside during the summer.
Yeah.
I was tearing roof off in January.
Okay.
Throwing it out the window.
So you got it to where you could tear the roof off
by October.
By the time it got cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I put decking over a garage. In other words, so I'm up in an attic, probably a 4.5 foot, maybe 5 foot tall attic at its peak. And so it was summertime. I found that 2:30 and 3 o'clock a.m. was the best time to do that little project.
I remember that little bit. It was awful hot in that attic.
I remember that. Right. Those are cookers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. And that'd be the thing about being an electrician, man. I bet you went when you were working.
Oh, I used to get off work at 4 or 4:30 and go wire for somebody else in their attics.
Oh, man.
You just drop in a sauna or
To make that extra money.
Yeah.
Feed that family and all them kids that won't leave home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like you've had a good life and dealt with things pretty well. And you're upholstering now, but you're not dependent on that for a living, are you?
No, I've got a pretty decent retirement from where I work as
an
electrician.
Other things, and then
about 30 years.
Probably draw a little Social Security and got that too. Got that kind of stuff. So you just kind of hobby and play and fooling with this upholstery and stuff, right?
Yeah, that and keeping a couple cars trying to run and stuff like that.
You still get out and work on cars a little bit?
Yeah. I spent the last hour in the trunk trying to find the ground wire.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Well, they're pretty easy to find. It's the one that's tied to the frame.
Where is it?
It's the green one, Ron.
It's the green one, Ron.
It's the green one, Ron.
You should know that. Well, we'll give you a few weeks, a month or two, and we'll call you and talk about working on cars. What the heck?
Might as well make you a permanent guest
on the show. Well, don't take any wooden nickels and be careful, all right?
All right.
Thanks, Ron.
We'll see you.
Bye, Ron. Back with more of the... But what are you going to talk? We'll talk a little bit about Christmas lights and putting them up and staple guns and things like that.
Okay.
That'd be a good kind of project to talk about. We'll do that in just a few minutes more of the Blind Handyman coming up. Hang on. It is the season, and that means gift buying time, and we think a great idea for some gifts for people for Christmas. And to tell us about it, here's Dale Campbell. Dale?
Hey, Phil and listeners. The gift we're going to talk about, and you all may have heard it, we promoted this originally on Cooking in the Dark. It's called the Voila. It's a talking barcode reader. No cords, no wires, no computers, 100% portable. Heck, it'll fit in your pants pocket or even in your purse to take to the store if you need to label any items. The Voila is about 6 inches long. It weighs less than 3.5 ounces, and it's a portable barcode reader. The unit comes with its own barcode, which as you scan the barcode, it will remember what has been scanned and allow you to record the item into the memory for what you've scanned. I've got a can in my hand, and I don't know what it is, y'all, but I'm going to run the Voila across it.
All right.
Can of chicken broth.
can of chicken broth.
A can of chicken broth.
Well, how about that?
Now, you can shake, rattle, and roll it, and you never would have known this. But the voila is, the voila is just that easy. In less than 5 minutes, you can be ready and using it. Labeling anything in your kitchen from spices to cans of food. Heck, in your garage, you can label cans of paint, glues, adhesives. It's perfect for everybody. You could even label your electrical box out in the garage or in, you know, wherever it is to label what outlets are what.
How do we get one?
You can call me at 713-876-6971 or email at cookinginthedark@houston.rr.com, and we can give you all the information regarding the voila. It's a super, super little tool. The price on it, folks, it's not $250 like you may have seen some places. It's not $229. It's not $200. It's not even $180. It's a special price right now of $150. That's right. Call and get in touch with me today so we can get one of these in your stocking for Christmas.
Give us the phone number one more time.
Phone number is 713-876-6971. Or email at cookinginthedark@houston.rr.com. You've got to have one of these. It'll make your life so much simpler.
Listening to the Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Green Giant. Anyway, I did a lot of that on Ken's radio station, Birmingham. I was cynical. Hi there, how are you? You know, at least.
So how long were you on?
About an hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, you were just like their special guest?
I was like their guest on their morning show at this. I can't remember what it is in Birmingham. Anyway, it's...
What's the call? You don't know the...
I don't know the call, but I told him this really corny joke about, I hired this guy this year to tend to the reindeer. He's really smart. He's from Russia. His name is Rudolf Zinchenko, and he takes care of the reindeer. In fact, you might say Rudolf the Red knows reindeer. Is that the worst Christmas joke you've ever
heard? Let's see. The end of the Cold War. There's no more commies, well, no more Reds.
There aren't.
Yeah, I can see how you could get it. I can see how somebody...
Well, you can't tell that to kids anymore because we're not threatened by the communists. The Reds.
Rudolf the Red knows reindeer.
I don't care what star you're following. Get those camels off my lawn.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's terrible, isn't it?
What a deal.
I wouldn't say that. Anyway, bah humbug. All right, Patterson, give us the bear claw update.
Here's the bear claw update.
Today's bear claw update. Right.
Well, they have probably... after today, probably half or 60% of the house bricked. The brick man is, yes.
They're getting on with it.
This guy's an amazing guy.
This brick man?
Yeah, he uses one guy to mix his mortar and bring the bricks to him, and he has laid every brick by himself, this guy has. And
really?
He works, I believe, with all my heart and soul, that if he had 8 days of good weather and the inspiration, they tell me his wife made him come to work, But I believe that this guy could have bricked this house in a week. In 7 days, I believe he could have done it. Because when he gets after it, on the pretty weather, now we've had some rain, and that stopped him a while. Also, inside, they are just about ready to texture. They have it all taped and floated. I mean, the second, you know, they did their taping.
So this house is ready to go.
Yes, and they've finally got all of our windows. We were missing a couple of, for lack of a better word, transoms. They're not open, but there are windows up over doorways. That's kind of the modern style now, window lights that go. And so we when the doors and the windows came, that we were missing two of these that go over French doors, the little five-paned glass that goes the length of the French doors.
Have they built your cabinets yet?
They're on the computer, and he's got the boxes, the bottom parts, framed without the exterior, you know, without the they build them in.
Wow.
What are they going to do about doors? I mean, they going to buy doors or build doors?
Well, no, for the cabinets.
Yeah.
No, he builds everything.
He's going to build the doors.
Yeah, he builds the doors, and that's all in the. And we also have all of the interior doors. They're out in the second garage to be painted. I guess that's where they'll paint them. And so, let's see, and the cupola is in place on the new garage. All the roof is done. The plumbing, as far as they can go, they haven't set the final fixtures.
Well, you know, building cabinet doors is a science in and unto itself.
Well, yeah, these people were pretty sophisticated. This builder, kind of like maybe what Ron, our guest earlier, should have considered. You know, if you're going to have these kids and kids' spouses, you got to figure out a way to put them to work.
He's got all these kids working
for
him.
So our builder, Emily, the warden, had an aunt, and she said, you know, now they all won't make a lawyer. You probably better buy a little business. You better get some kind of little business. So because they all won't make a lawyer. Well, so Billy Horton, what he did, he's built probably in his career. He's late 40s now, and he says he's built 300 houses.
Whoa.
And that's quite a lot. And so what he did is he built a shop, and he has a cabinet-making shop. So he does his own cabinet, his own trimming. He doesn't sub that out. And he also basically almost has an in-house painter. And then his son, that's his son-in-law, takes care of that part, married to his daughter. And then his son has bulldozers and backhoes and does all the landscaping and digging and all that. And so,
And he probably, in his cabinet shop, he probably would build doors for other builders, for somebody else that's building a house. Like he would probably build me a set of cabinet doors if I wanted a set, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and they do other, I suppose. Oh, yeah, I mean, not
because the stuff to build cabinet doors with is expensive, and it's a different. I mean, a cope and stick, you have to know, to build a raised door, which is what they're going to put on your cabinets, I'm sure, is you don't just do that out of a piece of plywood, kids.
They build theirs in pieces. Now, there is a man, that Scott is the son-in-law's name, and this is kind of an interesting thing. There is a cabinet maker in Neck who has gone out of business. But he has such a machine that will do raised cabinet doors out of a single piece of wood. I mean, it could be a 1-inch or they glue them. But the machine costs like $200,000+.
That's what I would think.
Scott,
so
I say, why don't you try to buy it from him? I mean, the guy has gone out of business or is no longer using it. And he said he just didn't think he could afford it. So they build their raised doors in pieces. They look just as good. They look really good. But you'd have to imagine the technology involved in a machine that would do that kind of scrolling and
it's a shaper. I mean that has not. It's like a router, except it has more than one blade.
Right.
So it does two or three things at once, but you have to. I mean, there's quite a science. I learned when we didn't build our cabinet doors, but he taught me a lot about. We talked a lot about it, building cabinet, and so it isn't something that an average carpenter can't do it.
And like I say, they've gotten so sophisticated. You know, just the average guy, it's kind of like, I guess the only thing I equate to it is like playing music. You know, the average guy can get a little better because he can buy a little box that'll do sounds and stuff. And that's the way carpentry is, you know, that they put everything on the computer, tells them their measurements, their angles, and so then they just go. It's just like cutting out cookies. Mm-hmm. You know, you get your thing set up. And
well,
now,
nowadays it is,
yeah.
Yes.
And so, and we had several choices of door designs, and we can even have glass put in some of them. In fact, the new style is you put wooden doors, except in maybe one spot, maybe a center someplace, you put glass in the doors.
Yeah.
And so we're considering doing that. And but anyway, that they've got our cabinets all measured and ready to go. And like I say, the texturer should be their texturing. And then after that, of course, you're going to get your trim carpenter and then your painters.
And finish the cabinets, and you guys are ready to go.
Right, and we're doing clear coat maple. And what it's going to tell you, yeah, with the sophistication, I mean, if you just looked at this guy, Scott's his name, you wouldn't think he was he's not a major, he's not a Robert Todd carpenter. He just learned, and he uses computers and machines, and he's learned how to operate his machines.
Yeah.
But we found an entertainment armoire, they call it, for TV and stereo at a store, a local store here in town, all wood, and we're talking $3,000. Finally got the guy down to $2,700. Scott is going to build me. I gave him the measurements. I went to the store and I measured this thing. He's also gone over there and looked at it and actually took a picture of it. He's going to build me the identical thing. Now, I'm not sure what kind of wood this one was built out of, but he's going to build mine out of maple and stain it dark to match our bedroom suit, and he's doing it for $1,500.
Now, real maple or maple veneer?
Well, no, maple.
Real maple.
Yeah.
I bet the one at the store was built out of maple veneer.
I have no idea.
I just bet it was.
But anyway, I tried pricing them on the Internet, eBay, so he's beat everybody's price by half. You know,
wow.
So, yeah.
Boy.
All right, let's talk a minute about Christmas lights, if you're going to put up Christmas lights this year. But that's a blind-friendly thing you can do.
Yes, it is.
You may or may not know this. We always think everybody knows everything you know. Well, they don't. And a lot of people may not know this. If you're going to put up Christmas lights, the best thing to do is go to the hardware store and buy a wire staple gun.
Yep.
They make a staple gun that shoots staples. The staple is not flat on top, but it's curved on top to go over wire. I mean, that's its point. You fit the staple gun has a little slot that you put over the wire, and then when you press the trigger on the staple gun, it puts a staple over the wire without getting that staple into the wire or cutting the wire in two, and they're probably $20.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to save you. If you're going to put up Christmas lights and string them, that's the easiest thing to do. You need one anyway if you're a project-type guy. But, you know, I didn't know till I was a grown man that they made those.
For running cable or phone wire or speaker wire even, maybe. That seems like maybe.
It's the thing to have. You got to be careful putting up Christmas lights. You can't really run too many strings off too many, you know, because it's a little thin wire, and you don't want to put too many strings in series. In other words,
you don't.
A lot of these Christmas light sets that you buy will have a plug on the end.
Oh yeah.
But you got to remember, if it's a flashing light, then it's going to flash all the strings. It's going to flash the first string. It's going to flash them all. That electricity won't go through just to that plug. That flasher on the end is going to flash every string. And I would recommend no more than maybe two, tops three strings in a row. In other words, don't start and just figure you're going to run them all around your front porch off of one plug. That's a dangerous thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
As thin as that little old
wire will start getting hot.
Oh, it will. The first string will get hot, and you're liable to, you know, it's like I told him. We went by the office Friday night at 8:30 at night. Or we went to Roma's Friday night, so we were downtown. So we went by the office to get something.
Yeah.
And all the Christmas lights were on, and I made her turn them off. And you don't want to go off and leave little old thin-wired, little bitty bulbed Christmas lights on a Christmas tree on without somebody being there.
Yeah, if the wire...
I don't think that's a good idea.
Starts getting hot.
I'm kind of lucky. I have the good fortune or misfortune, I'm not sure which, of living across the street from the lady who puts up more decorations almost than anyone in Lufkin.
That's
no
lie.
Every year she takes the prize. I think so.
Oh, yeah. Tons
of the best
decoration.
And, of course, what she does is the lighting's not a problem. It's the traffic of people coming to see her house on our little street. So what I do is I don't put up any lights. And she also decorates for every holiday. I mean, Halloween. So at Halloween for the trick-or-treaters, I just put a sign up and said, they went that away, and point over to her house.
Yeah, over to the neighbor's
but,
house.
It's real interesting if you want to talk about an expense. I saw where a man in, I think, Missouri, Ron's old stomping grounds,
yep,
has 50 or 60,000 lights. Says when he
Whoa.
Puts up his Christmas decoration, it increases his electric bill by $300 a month for those holidays.
So I bet you.
I bet
well,
you my
bah
neighbor.
Humbug.
I bet you my neighbor comes in for $150.
Yeah,
I'll bet you.
I bet you.
You might note that we hung up our Christmas stockings over the weekend, and the health department called and asked us to take them down. So, there you are. Ho, ho, bah, humbug.
Humbug.
Let me explain this. We're going to take a couple weeks off for the holidays. I don't do Christmas. We'll call this a New Year's vacation. Y'all can do Christmas, but we're going to do, this will be the last show we do until, we'll do another one on the, let's see, the 5th of January.
I
believe it's the
5th
of January, which will run on the 9th of, the next two shows are going to be reruns. We're going to take off on Blind Like Me and also the Blind Handyman. So I guess, we will see you folks in 2004, and I don't know what archive shows Don's going to run, but just whatever you think, Don.
We will see what we will see. Won't
so
we?
We'll say bye-bye. Thank you, Don Shaw and Don Pat.
Hey,
okay, Phil.
Appreciate you. Tom Houston, always.
Thank you.
And Mark Christie isn't available, by the way. We'll see you next in 2 weeks on the Blind Handyman. Stay tuned for the reruns and stay tuned for Dale's Cooking Show if you're listening on ACB Radio. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw. Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.